turn to Proverbs 10:24. I think we will have enough time to get through two of them tonight. Proverbs 10:24 says, "The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted." This is an interesting verse. Now, the fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him. Now, depending on whether it's used in the subjective genitive or the objective genitive, this could be taken two different ways. Anytime the word of is used, at least in certain constructions, it can refer to the subject or the object. And I'll tell you what I mean here. So the fear of the wicked could mean your fear of them, like you're afraid of them, or it could be their fear, right? So it could be they are the fear, or they are afraid of something, right? Either one. But when you look at it in the context, the fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him. The fear is coming upon him. Therefore, the fear of the wicked in this context is speaking of the thing which the wicked fear, right? The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him. The thing that they fear is going to come upon them, okay? So let's look at a couple of definitions. Fear is a sudden or terrible event, peril. It's the emotion of pain or uneasiness caused by the sense of impending danger or by the prospect of some possible evil. And then wicked is bad in moral character, disposition, or conduct, inclined or addicted to willful wrongdoing, practicing or disposed to practice evil, morally depraved, a term of wide application but always of strong reprobation, implying a high degree of evil quality. So in other words, the things which evil people dread and worry about will eventually come upon them. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him. Now you think, well, what do evil people worry about? What do they fear? Well, I got seven things here that they fear that will come upon them. It's just, you know, time. Well, it'll take some time. It might come upon them right away. It might not come upon them until the resurrection. But it's going to come upon them. Each one of these things will eventually. The first thing that the wicked fear, and they do have many, is they fear losing their wealth. And that will happen. And I haven't put these in any necessarily particular order, but I imagine that's probably one of their number one fears. Wicked people, especially rich wicked people, they fear losing their wealth. And that will happen. Psalm 49:16-20. So this fear is going to come upon them. May come soon, may take a while, but it will. Psalm 49:16-20. So be not afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. Though while he lived, he blessed his soul. He thought pretty highly of himself. And men will praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. His neighbors thought pretty highly of him too. I mean, look at this guy. He's really done well for himself. And if you ask him, he'll tell you about it. He'll tell you how well he's done for himself. He's really, really proud of himself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers. He shall never see light. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish. So don't worry when you see the rich getting rich, especially with the evil rich that are doing it by, you know, killing people or doing other evil things. Don't worry about that, because none of that's going to go with them. They're going to at least when they take the last breath, it's all gone. And a lot of times God has a way of taking it away from them even before they make it to their last breath. Let's look at Jeremiah 17 and verse 11. So this is one of their great fears, and it will happen. It'll come upon them. Jeremiah 17 and verse 11. It says, "As the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches, and not by right," so this is somebody that's done ill-gotten gains, you know, they've done something nefarious to get wealthy, "shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool." See, this doesn't happen when he goes to the grave necessarily. He's going to leave his riches in the middle of his days. Something's going to happen. He's going to lose all that wealth. Maybe, you know, who knows, the IRS catches up with him, or he makes a really bad business decision, or, you know, somebody, who knows what. Somehow he loses his wealth. and at his end shall be a fool. So he loses the wealth in the midst of his days, and then at the end he's a fool. So yeah, the fear of the wicked, it'll come upon him. You get those riches by unlawful ways, the Lord will see to it that he takes them away. Proverbs 23 and verse 5. Proverbs 23 and verse 5. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, they fly away as an eagle toward heaven. They have a way of doing that. So that would be the first thing that the wicked fear that will come upon them. Second thing is that they fear losing their power and control. That's definitely something that the people that are in power fear. They probably fear nothing more than that. They don't want to lose their power. That's why, like, the you know, Biden has declared the pandemic over, and yet he won't give up the emergency powers. None of them will. I mean, all these emergency powers, all these nations have invoked, they're not turning any of those over. They don't want to do that. They want to keep that power and be able to do whatever they want to do. They fear losing control. Let's look at Psalm 75 and verse 7. The Lord has a way to make that fear come to pass too, to take them out of power. Psalm 75 and verse 7 says, "But God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another." You know, promotion doesn't come from the east or the west or the south, as the previous verse says. But God's the judge. God's in the north. He puts down one. Right, so that fear of the wicked of losing their position of power, God will put them down. Remember Nebuchadnezzar? Daniel had told Nebuchadnezzar, "Break off thy sins by righteousness." And Nebuchadnezzar did well for a while, and then he walked out of his palace and he says, "Look at this great city Babylon that I have builded, full of pride." And that very moment, God took his understanding away and he went out into the field for seven times over and crawled around until his hair grew out like bird's feathers and his nails grew out like bird's claws and ate grass like an ox. Totally out of his mind. You know, God puts down the powerful when he wants to. 1 Samuel 2, 7 through 8. I mean, I don't think anybody would be surprised if they saw our president out walking around in the yard eating grass or something. I mean, he wouldn't forgot that he's not an ox or something. 1 Samuel 2, 7 through 8. I probably shouldn't say that. But 1 Samuel 2, 7 through 8. I saw a Babylon Bee article the other day. Those guys are clever, but they had the picture. For the article, the thumbnail thing, had pictures of Secret Service agents, and they were laying down hair along the White House lawn so that Biden wouldn't forget where he's supposed to go, because he likes to sniff, you know, little girls' hair. And so they're laying down hair so he goes in the right direction. I mean, of course, it's total satire. It's a joke. But yeah, it's funny because it could be true, right? So 1 Samuel 2, 7 through 8. Says, "The Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill and setteth them among princes, and to make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the Lord of the earth are the Lord's, and he hath set the world upon them." So the Lord makes poor and he brings low. So that kind of takes both of the, or you know, covers both of the things we've looked at so far. He takes away their wealth and he takes away their power. When he wants to. He did this to King Saul. He took the kingdom from him in 1 Samuel 15 and verse 28. And Samuel said unto him, "The Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou." And that was probably the beginning of when Saul began to hate David in his heart. "He's better than you, Saul." And that didn't sit well. But he took the kingdom, rent it right away from him. So he can do that. And one more in Luke 1 and verse 52. "The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him." I mean, look at the Democrats today. And I mean, the Republicans are no better, but the Democrats are in power. And look how badly they want to stay in power. And they're trying to change all the voting laws to make sure they can continue to cheat to get back in. They'll do anything that they possibly can and, you know, to get in power and to stay in power, make up stories and all kinds of stuff. And I mean, to sick the FBI on the guy that's going to be running against him in the, you know, probably the next election cycle. I mean, they'll stop at nothing. They don't want to lose their power, and that fear of losing it, it'll come upon them. I certainly hope anyway. Luke 1 and verse 52. Says, he hath put down the mighty from their seats and exalted them of low degree. See, the seat there is a symbol of power, right? The king sits on his royal seat, right? That's the seat of power. He puts down the mighty from their seats. So that fear of losing their power will come upon them eventually. And, you know, in a number of places in the Old Testament, how the kings lost their power is their own subjects turned on them and killed them. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's happened throughout history too. You know, Julius Caesar's subjects killed him. And it's happened in, I was just reading about a French king the other day in the book that I'm reading. His subjects did the same thing to him.
Zimri. That might have been his sons.
I think so, yeah.
Two people, yep. Zimri.
It's a dangerous business to be a king. Yeah. You got to keep your friends close and your enemies closer, I guess. Mm-hmm. Okay, third fear, that the wicked fear that will come upon them is the fear of losing their honor and status. Psalm 49 and verse 12. Psalm 49 and verse 12. Because that's, you know, people love the status. They love the praise of men. They love to be recognized in the community and all that. And that's one thing that they definitely fear, losing. Psalm 49 and verse 12. It says, nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. He is like the beasts that perish. So his honor will last a while, but it'll be taken from him. He might just do something ignominious and bring dishonor upon himself, or the Lord might just, you know, take him out too. All right, number four. They fear retribution for the way they treated others. And, you know, if you're a member of the mafia or something like that, I'll bet you those guys don't sleep very well at night. Because if you know you just killed off the boss of the other mob, mm-hmm. you know they're coming after you. You know, so that's got to be a fear that they worry about. And, I mean, I think that's why, like, getting back to the politics of the day, that's probably why they worry so much about Trump getting back in, because they're probably worried that he'll come after them like they went after him. And, you know, it's... politics is a dirty game.
Yes.
Galatians 6 and verse 7. Galatians 6 and verse 7. This is the thing. You harm somebody else, well, you better expect to get harm coming back at you. Galatians 6, 7. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he reap also. And if you sow wickedness, you'll reap the same. Let's turn to Job 4 and verse 8. So I think it would be especially if, like, the kings of old, I think it would be a paranoid position. You'd always be wondering who's out to get you. I mean, that's why they had the taste testers. You know, you never know when they're trying to poison you, they're trying to kill you, and who can you trust? Maybe, you know. Same thing. I mean, you know, modern day with Trump, because he was too dumb to realize who to appoint that would actually be on his side. And he had all these people in his cabinet that were all turning on him, and they were all, you know, spies and leaking information and all this stuff. And I'm sure it would have been a terrible place to be. But. Job 4 and verse 8. Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. And you sow wickedness, you'll reap wickedness. Isaiah 33 and verse 1. Isaiah 33 and verse 1. It says, woe to thee that spoilest, and thou wast not spoiled, and dealest treacherously, and they dealt not treacherously with thee. When thou shalt cease to spoil, thou shalt be spoiled. And when thou shalt make an end to deal treacherously, they shall deal treacherously with thee. It's like God almost waits until you're done spoiling, you're done dealing treacherously, and you think you got away with it, and then somebody else comes back and deals treacherously with you. I probably, you know what, I'm not, we can, you can look up these other verses on your own clock. Maybe I'll regret not reading them, but I don't want to be here too late. Habakkuk 2:8, Obadiah 1:15, 2 Kings 12:20, compared with 2 Kings 14:5. That's when one king's, I think it was his father was killed, and as soon as he got into power, then he had the men that killed his father killed. And then Proverbs 11:27. So anyway, I just don't want to be here too late tonight. So, the next fear is the fear of growing old and losing their health. That's another fear that the wicked have. That's why a lot of these people, these powerful people, they're all invested in this transhumanist technology. They take all these supplements and all this stuff to try to keep them alive. And some of them flat out tell you that they want to live forever. Like I think it's one of the CEOs or some higher up at Google. He wants to live 150 years, I think I read, or something, a while back. And they don't, that's the last thing they want to lose is their health. They don't want to get old. They don't want to die because for them, this world is all they have. This is it. And then they want to enjoy it as long as they can. But that will come upon them too. It comes upon all of us. Righteous or wicked, in Ecclesiastes 12, 1 through 5. It is just, it's a sad thing to me to see people, righteous or wicked, that fear getting old and dying and not having, just losing their youth and trying to still look young. I mean, there's nothing more tacky to me than an old woman that's still trying to look young. Have you ever seen like old ladies, like old ladies, and they're trying to look young, and they dress like they literally like they try to make themselves look like they're 20, and it just doesn't look good. I don't like that at all. I think if you're 70, you ought to dress and look like you're 70. You can look nice. I mean, make yourself look like the best 70-year-old you can, but don't try to look like you're 25. That's just gross. I don't like that. But it is. Anyway, but it's sad to see, there are people that do that and get the plastic surgeries. I mean, I know somebody personally, 75 years old and got plastic surgery. Yeah, well, so do you. Got plastic surgery at 75 years old to not have wrinkles or whatever. And it's like, what are you thinking? Like, it's crazy. Ecclesiastes 12, 1 through 5. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun, or the light, or the moon, or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain, and so you start to lose your eyesight, right? Everything gets darker. And in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, so your hands start to shake, well, that happens to old people, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they're few, they can't work anymore, they lose their teeth, right? And those that look out of the windows be dark and you can't see anymore. You get the cataracts and everything gets dark. And the doors shall be shut in the streets. You lose opportunities. When the sound of the grinding is low, you can't, and he shall rise up at the voice of the bird. You can't sleep anymore. And all the daughters of music shall be brought low, so you can't hear anything. Verse 5, And when they shall be afraid of that which is high, so they start to lose your courage. You don't want to go up on, climb up on ladders and things like that anymore. And fear shall be in the way. You're scared to drive. And the almond tree shall flourish. Your hair gets white. And the grasshopper shall be a burden. Everything's just, you lose your strength. And it's just hard to, it just takes all your strength just to get up and get your clothes on and get around. And by the time you do that, you're whipped and it's time to sit down and go to bed again. I mean, that's pretty much the life of when you get old. My grandma's old, and I mean, my dad's getting old, and it's like, that's a full-time job just to get up and get around so you can get your clothes on and get something to eat, and before you know it, the day's gone. I mean, that's all the more strength you have. That'll happen to every one of us if we live long enough. The grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. So that's going to happen to all these people, to the wicked. They fear that. They don't want that to happen. They want to be young and vibrant, and be able to live and have fun forever, and that fear is going to come upon them. Like old Barzillai, I won't turn there, but in 2 Samuel 19, 34 and 35, he was 80 years old, and he says, I can't discern good from evil anymore. I can't taste my food, right? I mean, he just lost his wits. He really can't think very clearly anymore, and can't even taste what he's eating. And David was asking him to come and eat at his table. He's like, you know, why do you want me to do that? I'm no help to you. All right, sixth thing that the wicked fear that will come upon them is death. Psalm 49:14. This is one thing they definitely fear. Because either they have an inkling of what's coming after it, or they just fear it because they just love life so much that they just don't want to die. They want to stay here forever. This is the only life they have. Psalm 49 and verse 14. We've gotten several of these points from Psalm 49 tonight. Psalm 49:14, like sheep they are laid in the grave. This is talking about the man that's in honor and abideth not. He's like the beast that perish. Like sheep that are laid in the grave, death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. That would be the resurrection morning. And their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. Death will happen to them. It's going to happen. It's going to feed on them. Job said that the worm shall feed on them. You think about that. That's your end. You're going to be worm food someday. Worms are going to eat you up. Pretty gross. And then Psalm 24, Job 24, verses 19 through 20. This may be the verse that I was just mentioning, or it may not. Job 24:19, it is the verse I was thinking of. Drought and heat consume the snow waters, so doth the grave those that have sinned. The womb shall forget him, the worm shall feed sweetly on him. He shall no more be remembered in the wickedness, and wickedness shall be broken as a tree. So the worm gets his meal once the rich, wicked person dies. And then number seven, they fear being judged by God for their sins, though they usually don't admit that. But that fear will happen too. And some of them, I mean, maybe some of them don't fear that at all. But I think, I'm certain that some of them do, because I've read of people dying, of wicked people dying on their deathbed that are terrified because they know hell's coming for them. I forget. It might have been Michael Landon, of all people. I think in that Hollywood study, I think his daughter said that he was just, when he was on his deathbed, he was just terrified. And I've read about other people like that, too, that were just horrified because they knew hell was coming for them. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 24. Don't quote me about the Michael Landon thing, but I'm pretty sure I remember that.
If they believe that, why didn't they try to change their lives?
Right. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I know.
Really believe that.
Yeah. Well, it's. I mean, the as it says, the leopard can't change his spots, and the Ethiopian his sin. Neither can ye do good that are accustomed to doing evil. It's the nature of man that their fallen nature just won't allow that. Even if they do think hell's coming, they still won't learn righteousness.
And probably being busy with all they were doing, you push that back and push it back, and then when your push comes to shove and you're on your deathbed and you realize that's over and I'm going to meet the Lord.
Oh yeah. You can't distract. You can't distract yourself with something else. Yep.
It's not a now problem until it's a now problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. 1 Timothy 5:24 So some men's sins are open beforehand, going before to judgment, and some men they follow after. So, you know, some people get their comeuppance early, and some get it right at the final judgment. And then Romans chapter 2, 5 through 9. And some of those people, as I talked about in that Hollywood study, literally made a deal with the devil. I mean, they said as much. You made a deal with the devil. I mean, you got to know what, you know, what you're doing there. And I would think that would be a very frightening time when you're laying on your deathbed. Romans 2, 5 through 9 says, "But after thy hardness and impenitent heart treasurest up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to every man according to his deeds, to them who by patient continuance and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. But unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that doeth evil, of the Jew first and also of the Gentile." So yeah, it's the final judgment's going to come. Their fear will come upon them. It's just like the people, you know, to your question, Wayne, in Revelation, when the judgments are coming and men are gnawing their tongues for pain and they're calling on the rocks to fall upon them, and they're still cursing God. They're in pain, they're cursing God. It's like they you'd think that if there was ever a time where they'd finally cry uncle and just say, "Okay, I'm sorry, I repent," it's like, nope. They won't do it. Their nature won't allow it. Okay, second half of the verse. "But the desire of the righteous shall be granted." So we get to end on a good note, which I like that. Desire is the fact or condition of desiring, that feeling or emotion which is directed to the attainment or possession of some object from which pleasure or satisfaction is expected, longing, craving, a particular instance of this feeling, a wish. And righteous is, when you're speaking of persons, as we are here, just, upright, virtuous, guiltless, sinless, conforming to the standard of the divine or the moral law, acting rightly or justly. So if we put the definitions in other words, people who are just, upright, virtuous, and conform themselves to God's standards and laws will be granted the things which they long for. They will have their desire. And I've got some verses here for you. Turn to Psalm 37 and verse 4. And we'll see that the righteous will get what they desire when they delight themselves in the law of God. Psalm 37 and verse 4. There's a couple of caveats here that the righteous will get what they desire if, you know, a couple of conditions are met there, and I'll talk about those. Psalm 37 and verse 4. "Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart." And if you delight yourself in the Lord, you're gonna delight in the things that God loves, and therefore your desires are going to be turned towards the godly desires that God would grant to you. Right? So if you're not delighting yourself in the Lord, the desires of your heart would be different than if you were. So a person that's not delighting themselves in the Lord, their desires would be wealth and fast cars and, you know, supermodels for wives or whatever, like all that kind of stuff. And those desires aren't going to be granted. But when you delight yourself in the Lord, you know, then your desires are focused on godly desires. The desire of the righteous is granted unto them when they obey God. Isaiah 58, 13 through 14. Isaiah 58, 13 through 14. It says, "If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight," remember you get what your delight is, "the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. So this verse explains Psalm 37:4 to us. When you say, well, what does it mean to delight thyself in the Lord? He just told you. If you delight in his commandments, honor him, not do your own ways, and not do your own pleasure, and not speak your own words. So in other words, if you delight in the things that God loves, if you do, if you take pleasure in the things that he takes pleasure in, if you speak the things that he likes to hear, right? If you delight in doing his commandments, that's delighting yourself in the Lord. And if you do that, he'll give you the desire of your heart. Now, of course, the desire of the righteous is granted when it's in accord with God's will. 1 John 5:14-15. See, this is where the people in the Word of Faith movement get all screwed up, as I was talking about here a few weeks ago, is that they never, ever mention the will of God. It's just whatever you want, you just say it. But that's not how God works. Yeah, God gives you the desire of your heart if it's according to his will. 1 John 5:14-15, and this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. And if we know that he hear us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desired of him. So when you just analyze that verse, if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us, and if he hears us, we have the desires of our heart. Right? So in other words, if you ask according to God's will, then you'll get what you ask for. Right? You always want to make sure that you preface your prayers, or tack it onto the end, one of the two, that if it is God's will, just like Jesus did. He said, Father, remove this cup, if thou be willing, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. Right? So he asked for something, but he asked according to God's will. And if you do that, you always get what you ask for, because either it's God's will, what you've asked for, and he gives it to you, or it's not God's will, but you've asked only if it's God's will. So you will... I mean, I don't know about you, but every single prayer I've ever prayed has been answered. Right. Yeah. I mean, let me put it this way. Every prayer I've ever prayed according to the will of God has been answered. A lot of them are no. Yeah. But they all get answered according to God's will. Right? So, yeah, beware of the person that says, oh, everything I've ever prayed for gets answered. I mean, any time I ever pray for anything, it just, you know, it's not more than 5 minutes and there it comes. Watch out about that. It didn't happen to Jesus Christ, so if it didn't happen to him, I'm very skeptical of anybody else that claims that it does. Now, because they fear God, the righteous will have their desire. Psalm 145:19 says, he will fulfill the desire of them that fear him. He also will hear their cry and will save them. So they get their desire if they fear him and when they fear him. So if you think about it, in a sense, the righteous also get what they fear. They get God. They desire God and they fear God, right? So they get their fear. Fear comes upon them. God. They get their desire, their fear, which is God. They fear God, and therefore they'll have him. Let me just give you a verse in Lamentations 3:24, which is the verse, the book right after Jeremiah. Lamentations 3:24 says, the Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. I want it, verse 24. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul, therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is my portion. So they get the Lord as their reward, as their inheritance. And they fear God, so they're getting what they fear, in a sense. The righteous desire God, and that desire will be granted. In Psalm 73:25, this is what the psalmist finally figured out. It took him a while. He was envious at the wicked, and he was in a bad way, and until he went to church and realized what a fool he was and how stupid he was for thinking how he was thinking, and he realized what's going to happen to the wicked and how dumb was I to be envious of people that are going to go to hell. That's not a very wise thing to be envious over. Psalm 73 and verse 25, he says, "Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside thee." Delight thyself in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. If the desire of your heart is God, yeah, you're going to get that desire. And in Matthew 5 and verse 6, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said that they that hunger and thirst after righteousness shall be filled. They'll get their desire. In Psalm 5 and verse 6, blessed, Matthew 5, 6, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. So, in summary of this verse, the wicked get what they fear, but the righteous get what they desire. And I don't know about you, but I would rather be on the side of the righteous to get what I desire, not that get what I fear. So that takes care of Proverbs 10:24. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. And next time, Lord willing, we will pick up with verse 25.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.